Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Serving spiritual seekers around the world. Unity Online Radio. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So, hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from a glorious fall day in Fort Worth, Texas. I'm here at Unity Fort Worth. Today we welcome a last-minute guest, actually, because the show we scheduled had to be canceled due to a family necessity, and so we wish them well and full recovery. But today I welcome the author of Spiritual Telepathy, Ancient Techniques to Access the Wisdom of Your Soul. The author, Colleen Morrow, is the founder of the magazine Intuition, which has been published now since 1988. And so I'm really happy she's available to be with me on today's show. So welcome, Colleen.
Thank you for having me.
This is a sudden change, so I haven't really had time to get up to speed completely with your book and the ideas, which I like to do because I don't want to just ask a bunch of questions. I like to have a discussion. But I am familiar with being a Unity minister for 27 plus years. I am familiar with intuition, and I've kept up with the reading on in terms of our connection to the universal mind, or whatever you want to call it, and so hopefully we'll have a good show here. First question I have though, in your book you say that we've got mindfulness techniques which come out of Buddhism basically, and yoga techniques coming out of Hinduism, but there's a deeper way to access universal truth than both mindfulness and yoga, and it's what you call spiritual telepathy. So tell us a little bit more about that, and why it's a deeper way.
Well, it comes from a connection to the soul, and I see it as the next step, a more advanced form of spiritual perception. And some call it the higher correspondence to our personal intuition. Our personal intuition provides guidance about our day-to-day lives, but the soul knows our higher purpose and can help us understand the bigger picture. It's our divine partner and our highest and most reliable source of direction and guidance. And it's through the soul that we have access to the universal or divine mind.
Right. So it's our sort of portal or threshold, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
To move from what we perceive as a smaller reality into this larger. Some people call it the divine matrix, or universal mind, the field. There's lots of authors who talk about this, but of course we've known this forever, haven't we? You call it yourself ageless wisdom, right? This isn't something new. We're tapping into something that has been in existence since the creation of the universe, basically.
Absolutely, and what I discovered through my research is that it's the core teaching that lies at the heart of all of our spiritual traditions, both East and West.
Right. Now, when we think of telepathy, we often think of, clairvoyant-type activity, being able to perceive things that aren't immediately apparent to ordinary consciousness. We don't usually use the word when we're talking about, contacting the universal mind. Of course, you call it intuition as well. So how does the word telepathy Because there's a sense with telepathy that it's coming from a distance, right? It's coming over the airwaves, if you like. So how does that fit to what we're talking about?
Well, I think it's different from clairvoyance because telepathy suggests a communication. And what I've discovered is that there's three types of telepathy. The lowest is instinctual or feeling-based telepathy, and we share this kind of telepathy with the animal kingdom, and it's still used as a means of communication in indigenous cultures. And the second or next higher is mental or mind-to-mind telepathy, and the highest of all is spiritual or soul-to-soul telepathy. And what I like about this teaching is that it illustrates the progression of our perceptual abilities from the instinct of early man to the intellect of modern man to the pure intuitive knowing of future man. And we're right in that doorway now where we can take that step from the physical into the subtle or superhuman worlds.
Right. And, of course, they nest in each other in a way, don't they? They complement each other because, you know, it's not like, well, we're rejecting the lower because now we've moved to this higher level. Each level has its own subtlety and its own effectiveness, I think. Yes, if we're in need of something telepathic on a more physical or instinctive level, then that can be just as valid as any other level, right? It's not like I got to get higher now.
Not at all. When we develop the next higher level, the old lower level doesn't go away; it just falls below the threshold of our conscious awareness. It's still there. Still there, but we just don't tap into it as readily.
Right. Yeah. Very, very interesting stuff. So, how do we contact it?
Well, we contact the soul through a practice called creative meditation. And this is what I found very interesting about this subject. Most meditation practices focus only on quieting the mind. In this type of meditation, we go a step further, and we actively train our minds to transmit information from the soul to the brain. The information has to reach the brain to become part of our conscious awareness, and it's in the same way that our homes are wired for telephone and internet connection. This kind of meditation allows us to create the threads and cables that link us to the higher worlds, and we create these cables by projecting our attention upward to the soul day after day, and we visualize the soul as a star about 6 inches above our head. And as we do this day by day, we anchor small threads of energy that eventually, thread by thread, form a symbolic bridge between the mind, the brain, and the soul. And this bridge is called the Rainbow Bridge or the Bridge of Light in the wisdom teachings. It's called the Antahkarana in the Hindu text, and it's called the Straight or Narrow Gate in the New Testament.
Right, so we're creating a sort of a pathway then. We're almost like you would create a new neural pathway by changing your thinking about something, so we're creating this more psychic pathway between our normal consciousness and our super consciousness.
Correct. We're moving. We're taking our first steps into the subtle worlds and moving our human experience to that next level.
Now, what's the danger of that little thing called ego getting in the way here when we do this work?
Well, it's something that we have to work on, and what I found is that the more we do this, the more we make that connection, the stronger it becomes, the more we live by the light of our soul, and the ego starts to dissipate little by little. And I was really kind of surprised by how quickly I felt the connection to my soul and how quickly I started to shift to that higher level. It's not that I don't fall back, but I found myself really moving much faster than I thought. And I think it's really the day-to-day practice. It's a discipline. It's something that we have to do day by day. And if we don't, and I found this to be true for myself, is that the bridge, so to speak, starts to dissipate. The energy starts to dissipate. It's really the daily discipline and experience that creates this connection.
I think it's also important to, you know, do some kind of release, isn't it? You know, it's not me here. It's not my human ability that's doing this. It's my spiritual joy to do this. And I think Jesus was very he emphasized this greatly. You know, he said, "I of myself can do nothing. It's the Father, you know, working in and through me that does the work." And I think as long as we acknowledge that portal to the infinite is not of our own making, you know, that then we're safe. When we think, "Oh my goodness, I'm special because I got this divine connection," I think it could be quite dangerous.
Yeah, I agree. There's actually a first step in this training, and it's considered the refinement of our physical, emotional, and mental bodies. And it's important because we need to create a direct line of communication between the soul, the mind, and the brain. And to do this, we have to purify the body and quiet our minds and emotions. If we're ill, if we're tired, if we have mental or emotional static, it makes it hard for our brains to register the higher wisdom and ideas. And refinement practices are part of all of our spiritual traditions. And the methods vary, but the requirements and goals are exactly the same. Purity of body, control of the emotions, and stability of mind. And in the book, I included the refinement practices that have helped me the most: harmlessness, the nightly review, and meditations on loving kindness, forgiveness, and compassion. I had a real issue with this. When I started to quiet myself down, I realized how much anger and resentment I was still carrying around, and there are people that I needed to forgive. And that really is a barrier to being able to perceive at these higher levels. You have to really quiet down the emotional body. So I did a lot of work on this, and it really made a difference in my life.
Right. And it reminds me very much of some of the practices, you know, that Patanjali uses in the Yoga Sutras and you know, in Raja Yoga in general, you know, like you say, harmlessness and control of the breath, etc., control of, you know, wandering thoughts, and very similar to the preliminary practices of Tibetan Buddhism, you know, where we move beyond hindrances so that we can stabilize ourselves for higher awareness. And so, you know, I think Jesus went through it too, didn't he? Because he went through a lot of purification, you know, during the wilderness period of his life, and moving beyond the beckoning of the ego to a more generous, open-hearted way of approach. So, you know, I think this is very important that we have these basic practices. I think the danger with some of those is we get hung up on being purity freaks. You know, that we, you know, I go, well, I got to do all my practices, otherwise I can't get to the higher level. And I don't think you're saying that, but I think some people get lost in it. You know, because from my experience, intuition can burst through, right? Even in the unlikeliest of circumstances, it doesn't require us to be always completely ready. Sometimes, you know, the profligate generosity of spirit will just break through in a way, the play of light on a tree or something that somebody says or whatever that can, you know, provide deep insight for us.
I totally agree. Yeah. It can happen spontaneously, but we can also train ourselves to be able to make that contact at will. And you said something interesting about Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, because creative meditation is actually based on the practice of Raja Yoga, so it's the same sort of idea.
Right.
Mind training that we have to do in the quieting down. One of his big sections in that book is all about quieting down the emotions.
Absolutely. Yeah, very good.
I had an go ahead.
No, please, go ahead.
I had an interesting experience of the spontaneous information that led to the launch of Intuition magazine. And I was in 1988, and I had been working in alternative magazine publishing for several years, and I was in between jobs and worried that I was going to have to leave San Francisco. At that time, San Francisco wasn't really a place to pursue a career in magazine publishing. I had actually run the West Coast offices for East Coast magazines, and I managed to have a really wonderful career right in San Francisco. And so at that point, I thought my luck had finally run out and I was going to have to leave. And I was worried about money and sending out resumes and wondering what I was going to have to do and really driving myself crazy, worrying about my finances and so on. And one morning I woke up and I decided that I needed a break and I would treat myself to one worry-free day outside working in my garden, but I wouldn't think about the fact that I was unemployed and running out of money for one solid day. And I was standing in my garden where a thought suddenly flashed through my mind, and it was the Center for Applied Intuition. And this wasn't the familiar type of intuitive experience. I'd always accessed intuition through my feelings or some sort of body-based sensation. This was a purely mental experience. The words seemed to have been dropped right into my brain. And I immediately knew that it wasn't my thought, and it certainly made no logical sense. I knew about the center, and I had met the founder, and I couldn't imagine why I would go there to look for a magazine job. They did intuitive trainings, and they sent expert intuitives out to businesses and so on. Didn't make any sense. It was a tiny little two-room office. But I thought about it, and I thought, well, what have I got to lose? And I called him, asked him to send information about the center's activities. And a few days later, a large manila envelope arrived. I dumped it out on my dining room table. And inside there were several brochures and a very simple typewritten journal called Applied Sci. And this was the quarterly publication that he sent to the center's 200 members. It was about the subjects of intuition and creativity. And I was absolutely fascinated by it. And as I flipped through the pages, I thought, wow, this could be a real magazine. Would have to have a different name and have to be upgraded. But I think this is a subject that would be of interest to a much wider group than the center's 200 members. So I made an appointment to talk to him, told him what my idea was, and he just lit up and just said that he'd always dreamed of that. The right person had never come along. I went home, banged out a proposal, and the next day brought it back, and suddenly I had a magazine. And I had no budget. I begged my writer friends to contribute free articles. I sold advertising to pay for the printer, and I trucked them around to local bookstores in my car. And they all sold out within a week, so I knew my hunch had been right. And I started a national distribution network, and Bill, about that time, decided to close the center, but he signed the rights over to me. And I later got a grant that allowed me to rent an office and hire a staff. So it all sort of flowed from that one experience I had in the garden. And it's interesting to think about it now because I realized that I could have never gotten there through the rational mind. Never in a million years would I have thought to go there to look for a magazine job. And I also couldn't have seen that in the next 10 years there would be an absolute flood of information on this subject, and the magazine really provided a focal point. So I was just putting one foot in front of the other and following this guidance. There's an esoteric saying that we don't really need to know anything but what our next step is, and I think this is a good illustration that I really had no idea. I was really just following it moment to moment, and it all unfolded from there. So that was totally spontaneous.
To share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives.
I will leave this world as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
Every moment we live can be holy, and all we need to do to experience that state is to make the decision to do so. Everything we do can be a prayer, and by using our innate creativity with intention, in every aspect of our lives, that can indeed be true. Author Carla Kincannon wrote, "Creativity is so much more than art making. It is a tool for navigating through everyday experiences to find the sacred in each God-given moment. Discover Creative Spirit Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Central Time, and experience the joy of connecting to spirit through creative expression. You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Colleen Morrow. We're talking about the book, which is called Spiritual Telepathy, and it's about how to connect with that universal field of consciousness. Spiritual techniques, ancient techniques that are modern, both ancient wisdom and new thought, and just like the teachings of unity, ancient techniques to access the wisdom of your soul. And you know, so often we think, oh well, this stuff is just for great inventors or geniuses, and many people have studied how geniuses and inventors and others who are at the top of their game, how they've received information, and a lot of it comes from intuition. And of course, famously, Einstein himself said that, you know, the most important thing was that intuitive connection, and connecting into the mystery, because we don't have to understand it all. In fact, we can't, but we can tap into it. Being a writer myself, I know that, you know, there's a blank sheet, and then all of a sudden there's something on it, and it doesn't necessarily come from my mind. It's coming from the universal mind and filtered through me and my thoughts, but not limited to those. And so, you know, it's not just for geniuses, right? That this intuitive awareness, this telepathy is available to us all, right? I think that's one of the things you emphasize in this book, Colleen.
Absolutely. And what I found, and this was really interesting to me, was that this is really the experience that we call genius. And it's not a rare and random event. It's something that each of us can cultivate. The wisdom teachings tell us, again, that the soul is the portal or gateway to the higher worlds. When we make contact with the soul, then we have access to the universal or divine mind. And I started to do some research on this subject, and the first thing I did was to reread one of my all-time favorite books, which is Higher Creativity. It was written by the late Willis Harmon, who was the president of the Institute of Noetic Sciences. I think he wrote it in 1984. And in this book, he looked at the biographies of artists, writers, composers, scientists, and inventors, and discovered that their greatest achievements came from an intuitive breakthrough. And he had quotes sprinkled throughout the book, and some of them had become well-known. But after I reread it, I went back to his bibliography, and I started to read his original sources. And what I discovered is that many of the people that we call geniuses talked about their creative process in exactly the way explained in the wisdom teachings, that it was through the soul that they had access to a universal flow of information and inspiration. There was one really wonderful book called Talks with Great Composers, and it was written in the late 1800s, and the author interviewed Puccini, Brahms, Strauss, and Wagner, and other well-known composers about the source of their creative genius. And I was fascinated by the consistency of their experience. Each of them spoke of the soul as a portal to a universal source of inspiration, that once they were connected to the source, the ideas and images simply flowed into their brains. And I put many of these stories in the book. And then it became very clear that genius, it just doesn't land on somebody by chance. It is something that each of us can cultivate. And Einstein is a good example, because he talked very clearly about his inspiration coming from a higher source. And it was interesting to note that after he died, the researchers dissected his brain trying to understand why he was so brilliant. And I'm sure he thought that was hilarious. The brain is simply the receiving plate. It's not the generator of the experience. But it makes sense that they would study that, because it's the only tangible thing they can study. But he made it very clear in what he said that his inspiration came from a higher source.
And it's a fascinating subject. There's a you know, we're talking about memes as well, these discrete ideas that come universally, you know, and, excuse me, I'm going to cough. Okay. Sorry about that, folks, and sorry about that break in the flow earlier in the first segment. My communication device died there, so it happens sometimes. You know, this idea of memes, which is sort of like DNA or chromosomes, but they're in the field of consciousness, and that we can draw upon them. And in fact, you know, somebody can be inventing something in one part of the world, and another person, without knowledge of the other person, will be thinking of the same thing. And the only way you could work that out and understand that is to understand that everything is in this universal field or matrix, right, that we're tapping into. And it is interesting that computers were kind of invented around the same time by folks working in different societies who had no contact because they were at war. So, you know, it's interesting how that universal wisdom is available to us all. I find that quite fascinating.
Yeah, I do too. And there's a saying in esoteric books that the higher beings that guide the evolution of our planet will throw down, so to speak, information into various brains to try to see the next wave. And many people get the same idea at the same time. And we can see that in all the intuition books that came out in the 90s. There was just an absolute flood. And I know at least one other person who had the idea to start a magazine about intuition in exactly the same time that I did. So it a lot of people do get these ideas. What really makes a difference is how many of us act on it.
Yes, there we go. That's always the $64,000 question, isn't it? You know, it's mm-hmm. easy. We all receive things, but then it's do we act on them? We've all had mystical experiences or aha moments, but then we, you know, can dismiss it. Oh, well, that wasn't anything, or it's a passing fancy, and then we go back to our ordinary lives. Other people will get that information and run with it and you know, transform their lives as a result. I remember when I was in college in Oxford, and I had a literary magazine that I edited, and I asked one of our artists to draw a picture of like a crazy poet, you know, having an aha moment, you know, of intuitive connectedness. And this was long before I was consciously on the spiritual path, but, you know, I was obviously tapping into that even back then, this idea that, you know, it's ecstasy, isn't it? It's ecstasy is standing outside yourself, you know, that's the etymology of the word. And we're outside of our ordinary reality, we're into another reality. We've crossed the liminal field, the liminal threshold into across the veil, if you like. And I know you talk about that in the book as well, mm-hmm. Crossing that veil. How do we do it, though? There's certain qualities. You mentioned the refinement practices, mm-hmm. but what else do we need to accept? I guess part of it is acceptance. I accept my genius, right? I accept, I mm-hmm. trust that there's a wisdom within me that is universal. But it does require a certain chutzpah, really, doesn't it, to claim your good, if you like.
Mm-hmm. I really think that we can develop a more consistent channel, because it does sort of land on us sometimes. And the idea is that we either take it up or we don't. But we can actually do a mind training practice that allows us to make contact with that higher world at will. And that's the practice of creative meditation that I mentioned before. It's really a
right.
deep practice, and we essentially create that bridge between the mind, the brain, and the soul.
Right. We'll talk more about that in a little minute, because I think that's a hugely important part of this this work that you're doing. You mentioned in the book too that, you know, we're being invited into this next evolutionary leap. You know, some people say, hey, if we don't leap, we're going to die. You know, and not just mystics are saying that, but politicians, whatever, that we got to do something about the chaos in the world. Andrew Harvey, for instance, you know, talks about having to go through this terror in order to come through into some kind of sacred activism, which he talks about living life from a new paradigm. Mm-hmm. And you obviously agree with that, right? That mm-hmm. we must do something here.
Absolutely. When we make conscious contact with the soul, everything changes. we lose our sense of separateness and realize that we're part of a great universal life, the soul of humanity. And
right.
we find our place within that greater whole and experience our interconnection with everyone and everything. And you can imagine how the world would change if a critical mass of people made this shift. Barbara Marx Hubbard has written that those of us on Earth today are the crossover generation, that we're responsible for leading the way from one stage of our species evolution to the next. And Eckhart Tolle talks about this too, but he talks about it in more stark terms, like Andrew Harvey, that as a species, we have the choice to evolve or die. They
right.
both say that evolution happens as the result of some sort of crisis that propels or forces us to make a leap forward. And Tolle uses the example of an amphibian who's forced to develop the ability to live on land after its habitat dries up. And we're in the same position now. Our own habitat is in trouble. And our world is full of conflicts. We have loose nukes floating around. And we have to make that leap, not onto land, but into the subtle worlds, into that next step.
You know, some people are positing that, you know, the leap is going to take place, you know, mechanically or digitally, you know, through artificial intelligence. And again, others have said that, you know, artificial intelligence may be the greatest threat to humankind, you know, because if computers and you know, artificial intelligence sources become self-aware, you know, they may consider us as human beings too messy and too destructive and want to eliminate us. And it seems like there's two great fields of study right now. You know, there's the field that you're talking about, which is in intuitive consciousness, and then there's the digital field of ever-refining machines. So do you think that eventually is going to be a big battleground between the two different ways of seeing and being?
Not really. I think that we have all the hardware we need to become what the scientists might call the post-human, the divine human. And what these transhumanists are talking about is implanting microchips in our brains, that's what we need to do to reach that next level. And it's really unnecessary because we do have it, and we do have the ability, and it's just activated slowly through the evolutionary process. So I think as more people make that shift, it's going to seem less and less important to do that kind of research.
So there'll be a sort of a telepathic internet, right? We won't need iPhones or whatever. We'll have our own conscious ability to connect with the universal field of consciousness.
Absolutely. And it's interesting to note that the internet is called the World Wide Web, which really just duplicates what the esoteric books call the etheric web. And I've also thought it was very interesting that each of our communication devices starts out as huge and heavy and becomes smaller and more portable. The first computer weighed tons and tons, and now we have iPhones and Google Glass and so on. It just got smaller and more portable. And so eventually we'll realize that we don't really need an external device, that we have that ability.
Right. So you don't think there's going to be a sort of a choosing off between the two ways of approach then?
No, I don't. I think that people will wake up and see that that's not really necessary. I think it's interesting research, but I personally think that it's really unnecessary.
Right.
And a little scary, too. There's some ethical issues, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's where a lot of people are going, you know, is that we're playing God by creating another intelligence source, you know, in computers or whatever, and eventually that source is going to take over from us, you know. So, interesting. The jury's out in my mind. I'm a little concerned about artificial intelligence personally, because I think it can have unforeseen implications for us. You know, of course, back in the 70s, we all saw 2001 Space Odyssey and how the computer, you know, decides that he knows better than the people on the spacecraft and
right.
tries to, destroy everyone, basically. And so there's that scary, fascinating moment where the protagonist, you know, has to shut the computer down. And it's very prescient, isn't it? Although that was, you know, many years ago now, 45 years ago or more. You know, it's very apropos of what's happening in our current society. Very very interesting stuff. So I have to trust the process, right? That I have this amazing capability within myself. And then refine myself in the sense that I'm creating a sort of a platform on which to create this rainbow bridge. Mm-hmm. And then we move into the meditative aspects of it. And I want to talk more about it in the third segment of the show today. And let's focus on the rainbow bridge in that segment. But is that the only way to access this, or are there other ways?
Well, there's teachings on this in every tradition, and it varies in tradition to tradition. This particular practice, again, is based on Raja Yoga, on what Patanjali taught so many years ago.
Right. So that's your particular focus and interest, but you're saying that there's possibly other ways we can attune to this as well.
Yeah, there's absolutely other ways. Like I said, I thought very carefully about how to present this material before I started the book, and because it's esoteric, I wanted it to be credible to a wider audience than people that usually read these books. So I looked for the commonalities across traditions, and to my delight, I found that it really is the core teaching that exists at the core of all religions. And so I really presented it as that, as the core teaching, a universal teaching. And it was fascinating to me to be kind of a detective. I didn't really have a background in world religions, so I studied this very intently for quite a number of years to look at the commonalities, and they're there.
Right, absolutely. You know, Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free." Mm-hmm. And it's the same idea, isn't it? You know, to know intuitively. Charles Fillmore, co-founder of Unity, said you can know by simply holding the thought that you know. So again, he's inviting us to, beyond having to work it out intellectually, it's opening to a larger wisdom. And it's a wisdom that confounds our ordinary ways of looking, I think, sometimes, because we can't work it out logically. I think it's one reason why some people just can't handle religion, because it invites them to surrender to something higher. And they're afraid of that. You know, they think, if I let go of my control, then forces beyond me could take over. And this is a benign and benevolent universe, though, right? When we tap into these fields of consciousness, it's safe, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And why?
When we do it through the soul,
right?
It's safe when we do that. But I mean, there are astral entities and it's possible to get in trouble, but we're protected by the light of the soul if we do our practices, whatever they are, to make that direct contact.
Right. Okay. So, I like to think, I think it was Einstein asked the question, didn't he? Well, the most important question we can ask ourselves is the universe friendly? Mm-hmm. And, if you don't think it's friendly, then you're in trouble, because you've allowed that, unfriendly, hostile nature to infiltrate you. But if you accept that inherently everything is for our good, then we begin to embody that as well. So it's a very interesting question. What am I capable of conceiving here? Do I conceive a friendly or a very frightening universe? I think we've been in both places in our lives, but choose the light, I guess. Mm-hmm. I'm with Colleen Morrow. We're talking about her book, Spiritual Telepathy. And we're going to talk more about the Rainbow Bridge, or the Bridge of Light, when we come back from these messages from Unity. Join us then.
Spirit of Recovery is the place where spirituality and recovery meet, where we support your spiritual growth. Reverend Anna Schaus, PhD, interviews down-to-earth guests who share with you how they keep going and growing in recovery. Spirit of Recovery is the place to get practical tips and join in lively discussions on topics that matter to recovering people. This program welcomes everyone who wants to know more about recovery.
Join Anna and her guests live every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Central Time on Spirit of Recovery, where we talk about what keeps you growing. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Just like life, grief is a journey, not a destination. Whether it is loss of life, relationship, security, or simply the process of change, have you given yourself permission to begin your journey of grief? Have you yielded to the gift of grace? Join Reverend Chaz Wesley every Thursday at 5 p.m. Central on a virtual navigation from grief to grace, and explore new horizons of empowerment, significance, and support. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'll light a candle in your name.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Colleen Morrow. We're talking about book on spiritual telepathy. And yes, if you like this show and other shows on the Unity Online Radio Network, the voice of an awakening world, then consider donating to us, keeping us on the air. Check out my website at pauljohnroach.com. There's a wealth of podcasts on there, both from this show and from my sermons on Sunday and other materials. So check that out. Email me with your ideas. And if you want to get in touch with Colleen, what's the best way to do that, Colleen?
It's through my website. It's spiritualtelepathy.net.
There we go. Easy to do. And the book's available in all the usual outlets. It's a fascinating book by the sound of it. Like I said, I'm unfortunately didn't get to read it this time, but we're doing okay. We're covering some of the ground. One of the things that Colleen talked to me about at the break was the idea that, you know, this isn't just woo-woo esoteric stuff, that there's an underpinning in the universal wisdom of all religions. And, you know, if it's in all spiritual traditions, there's got to be some authenticity here. Also, it makes good scientific sense, too. It's not just something that we have to believe at a kind of a woo-woo level of understanding. So talk about that a little bit, Colleen.
Well, before I started this, as I said, I looked for ways to frame this so it would be credible to a wider audience than people that just read esoteric books. And so I looked for the universal teaching, which I found in all religions, and I looked for any scientific backup. And it was very interesting because what I found was that reading our frontier scientists, especially the early pioneers of quantum theory, they talked about the energetic web underlying matter as a kind of mind-like sea of energy or an information field. They talked about that there's only one mind in the universe and that we can all tap into it. If you take away the names and just look at their quotes, you would think that they're from an esoteric book. And we have our current scientists like Dean Radin and Rupert Sheldrake who are doing this kind of work and doing experiments that really back this up, that there is some universal connection that we all can tap into. So
right.
It's fascinating.
Absolutely. And yeah, Rupert Sheldrake, interesting morphogenic fields and whatnot. And then there's Irvin Laszlo, who's also a respected scientist who's worked a lot with the Akashic fields, etc. Mm-hmm. So different names for the same thing in my mind, that these are the universal fields of consciousness that completely fill the universe, actually, and emanate directly from the creator herself, if you like, and that we are, as beings of this universe, and one with the one, because there is no separation in spirit, we can tap into that universal field. And you talk about, you've mentioned it already, the rainbow bridge, which is that bridge of light which we can create between our normal selves and the super conscious self. Can you talk about it a little bit more about it?
Sure. What I did in the book is I provided both the theory and a step-by-step mind training practice that allows us to build that bridge day by day. And I joined an esoteric school right in the middle of my studies, and a lot of it comes from what I learned there. There's actually 12 meditations in the book. Some are for refining the emotional body. That was such an issue for me, I figured it would be an issue for other people too. So I included the meditations that were the most helpful to me. And then I have 3 progressive meditations, mind training meditations, that take people step by step building the bridge. And it's very interesting because I'd always been very touched when reading about people with the ability to communicate with the higher worlds. Joan of Arc, for example, talked to saints and angels. And Eileen Caddy received the guidance that led to the founding of the Findhorn community in Scotland. And the botanist George Washington Carver walked in the woods each morning to talk to God. And apparently God talked back. He called it the divine radio. And it's always stirred a longing in me, and I've always wondered, is it only special people? Are these people more evolved than I am? Is it somehow preordained, or do we have to move into a monastery? And by immersing myself in this topic, it became clear that with the proper training, we can all cultivate this ability.
Yes. And I like to use the technique called the cloud of witnesses, where I gather around me mentors and family and spiritual teachers into a sort of circle and see light coming from them to me and me from me to them and receiving wisdom from them. And I think it's the same, similar technique. I'm connecting my ordinary humanness with all that's available. And often, you know, those people that are charged for us, you know, that family that we love or spiritual teachers that we admire and we've learned from, they can help us in this visualization because they have energy or we have energy with them. And I think this is an important part of this, isn't it? When you create your rainbow bridge, it has to be a beautiful bridge that you're excited about so that you want to be there. You want to make that connection. It's meaningful for you. I think that's hugely important here. If it's something we're just doing because we're going through the motions because somebody else said this was a good idea, I don't think it works. You have to find the mojo, if you like. You have to find the energy in it for you, and then it's gonna automatically open up. So you have to find your joy, I guess you could say. You know, if you don't have the joy for it, it's not gonna really work for you.
Absolutely. It's really that connection with the higher worlds that starts to raise our vibration, and we start to open up and we start to feel that joy. And once we get a little bit of a taste of that, then we want more. And that's what I experienced. It's not so much a drudgery, you know, a discipline that I have to drag myself out of bed to do every morning. It becomes something that you want to do because you want more of that experience. And in the New Testament, it said that we take heaven by storm, and I always wondered what that meant. And I think what it means is that it's our determination, our day-to-day knocking, that eventually opens the door to the higher worlds. And as we approach the soul, we come under the influence of its higher vibration, and our own vibratory rate starts to speed up. And it said that when the vibratory rate of our mind and brain matches that of the soul, it becomes possible to enter the higher worlds at will. And when we do this, over time, it will produce a new type of human, the soul-aligned human being. And it's then that we become the pioneers as we lead the way from one stage of our human development to the next. And another interesting thing that I discovered is that in this teaching, it said that when we project our attention upward, the soul projects its attention downward. And the building of this bridge is actually a united experience, the soul and the personality. We extend our attention upward. The soul helps us by pulling our attention upwards. It's the day-by-day when we get
through. And, of course, at the beginning of your book, you have a quote from Genesis, you know, from the it's from Jacob's Ladder, I believe, and, mm-hmm. and you know, the connecting. And the interesting thing about Jacob's Ladder is the angels are both arising and descending, which is exactly what you just said, you know, yeah. that once we begin to move towards God, when we lift ourselves up and look upwards to the universal field, the universal field begins to look down upon us, because as above, so below, there's that interconnectedness, and that's a beautiful thing, I think. And it's said in the Sufi tradition that if we take one step towards God, God takes 100 steps towards us, you know, because God is so much more magnificent than what we could even conceive of. So I love that idea, though. And, you know, Jesus said in Revelation, I stand at the door and knock, and it's the door then between, again, our ordinary selves and the super conscious self, and there's the Christ, you know, that connectedness, inviting us over the threshold, right, to cross the liminal space into this new awareness, which is again the same thing we're talking about in other traditions. So it's all connected.
Mm-hmm. I have actually never read the New Testament. I grew up Catholic, and you just don't read the Bible. And so I read it, and I was fascinated by it, and I developed a very passionate interest in esoteric Christianity, so I really immersed myself in this, and I just couldn't get enough. And then I went back, and I read the New Testament again, and it really comes alive when you look at the deeper meanings. This whole idea that we take heaven by storm really didn't make any sense to me until I put it into that context. There's so much esoteric information there. It's just slightly below the surface, and it was fascinating, absolutely fascinating to read it with fresh eyes.
Absolutely, and I like to think of Jesus as a Zen master, because, you know, when we read it in that more esoteric or universal context, you realize, my goodness, he's teaching in the same manner that Zen masters teach, and not even using koans or riddles to shake people up, you know, use the contradiction to shake people up out of their ordinary everyday reality to this higher awareness. So again, that's fascinating too, to see him in that context, because we have these images about him that maybe aren't accurate, the overlays of Christianity, but when we get back to his real teachings, they're radically in alignment with potentially and Zen teachers and, you know, and other masters of the world. So fascinating stuff, isn't that? The encouragement is that, you know, that there's this, basically this one way, if you like, the narrow gate, narrow way, or the middle way, as Buddhists would call it, you know, or the Kundalini, whatever. They're just different ways of talking about this pathway to higher consciousness. Yeah, really exciting stuff.
Well, he talks somewhere in the Bible about how he teaches in parables for the masses, and that there's a deeper teaching for those people that are ready. And so the information really is there. You just go just slightly below the surface, and you can see it.
Right. Well, very few of us are ready for the, you know, the truth without sidestepping around it a little bit. And that's where parable comes in. You know, we just don't get it directly, and that's okay, because I think that's we learn through story and we learn through image, and even the Rainbow Bridge is an image of this connectedness. And whatever works for us, I think, can be helpful. But ultimately, we will see, as St. Paul said, face to face, you know, not darkly through mirrors. But that, you know, that's another level of apprehension, I think, just to see that. Folks, it's been a joy to be with Colleen Morrow and listen to her share all this wonderful news about spiritual telepathy. Let me tell you what's on next week, and then I want to say, let me ask you one more question. Think about it while I tell you who's on next week. If there was one thing you want to impart to our listeners today in about 10, 15 seconds, what would it be? Okay, hold that thought, and then I'll tell you about next week. Next week, Oxford graduate, copywriter, poet, and old friend, Simon Wood joins me from London, and he's going to talk about his work with local radio station The Croydon Pirate, and share some of his latest poetry, which is pretty wild stuff, actually. So it's going to be an interesting show. So what one thing would you want to impart to our listeners today, Colleen?
That it's the ability to access the higher worlds is not just for special people. It's something that each and every one of us can do, And a lot of us feel like we have a part to play in this big shift that's coming. And this is the way that we can do this. We can find what our higher purpose and what our particular job in this greater field is. And it's by accessing the soul.
Yeah, lovely. All right, so be encouraged and delve deeper into this wonderful ability that we all have. And good luck to everybody on that journey. So thanks to Colleen. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks for listening, folks. And join me next week. All right, take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world.
What if you were intentional about your life, committed to having more energy and being more vibrant? Join Reverend Temple Hayes, spiritual leader of First Unity at Unity Campus in St. Petersburg, Florida, as she guides you on a journey to an intentional and energetic life. Empower your life and fully express the wondrous energy, love, and joy you hold in your wildest imagining. Joyfully and actively know that more important than what happens after you die is the deeper and enriching concern for what happens while you're living. How can you experience an incredible life right now? Learn how each week on The Intentional Spirit, Seeing and Being, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Central Time, right here on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Inspiration only takes a moment. If you are able to safely turn your attention away from the demands of your activities, quiet your mind and affirm, "There is a divine plan at work in my life. I now relax, let go, and let it unfold." Listen attentively, inwardly, without projecting any thoughts about what you think should happen or be experienced. Become as a child, trusting and receptive to the guidance of Spirit within.
This meditative moment, adapted from Mary Kupferle's God Will See You Through, is brought to you by Unity.
Notice how the funniest things happen when we stop taking ourselves too seriously and step out boldly? Listen to Funniest Thing with Daryl and Ed as these unlikely saints administer a refreshing dose of laughter and love that will inspire you to step out boldly and experience the funniest things. Join the discussion with Daryl and Ed live every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Central Time on Funniest Thing, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.